I'm in the bull rushes this morning. But we're not going to talk about Moses today. No, I love that second song the kids sang this morning, as always, because it's one of those ones that sticks in your head. And you get to sing it all week. And that's a really good message to be singing all week, is I love Thanksgiving. If you see me in the grocery store, I'll be singing along. Fresh out of business school, a young man applied for an accountant position. And he was being interviewed by a very nervous businessman who owned this particular small business. The owner said, I need someone with an accounting degree. But mainly I'm looking for someone to do my worrying for me. Excuse me, the young accountant said. He said, I worry about a lot of things, but I don't want to have to worry about money. And your job will be to take all of the money worries off my back. I see, the young accountant said, and he says, and how much does this job pay? I'll start you at $80,000, the businessman said. $80,000, the young guy claimed. How can such a small business afford a sum like that? That, the businessman said, is your first worry. Now, the point of that is, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could pay someone to do our worrying for us? It's amazing to me how many things we can find in life to stress us. Even at Thanksgiving time, or maybe for those of you who are responsible for cooking for a large family, or those who are entertaining their relatives, maybe we find ways out to stress out, especially at Thanksgiving. There was a woman in one of my previous churches who told me about visiting her parents for Thanksgiving. And even though her mother was over 80, her mom decided to put on the traditional Thanksgiving dinner. After spending the day preparing all the foods, her mother was getting ready for bed, and her daughter noticed that her mother had set the alarm to go off at 4 a.m. Her mother explained that she had to turn the oven on at 4 o'clock to cook the turkey. Now, the daughter knew that her mother's oven had a timer and asked her mom if she knew how to use it. And she said, well, of course I do. But I've been getting up for over 60 Thanksgivings to turn the oven on. And it just wouldn't be the same to have the stove do it for me. Now, she suspected, as do I, that her mom really didn't trust that timer on the oven. And she would worry if she personally didn't check so that she could get that turkey started on time. We had a bit of a worrier like that for a mom, right? He didn't hesitate on that one. But I remember an old verse, and I suppose it might have come from my father, but there is an old Irish verse by an unknown author that goes like this and talks about worry. It begins, why worry? In life, there are only two things to worry about, whether you are well or whether you are sick. Now, if you're well, you don't have anything to worry about. And if you're sick, you only have two things to worry about, whether you get better or whether you die. If you get better, you have nothing to worry about. And if you die, you only have two things to worry about. Whether you go to heaven or whether you go to hell. Now, if you go to heaven, you have nothing to worry about. And if you go to hell, you'll be too busy shaking hands with your friends that you won't have time to worry. So why worry? Now, the word worry comes from an old Anglo-Saxon word meaning to strangle or to choke. While we need to be attentive to life's concerns, worrying about them chokes the joy right out of life. Worrying is kind of like driving a car with one foot on the accelerator and one on the brake. You know, you make a lot of noise, but you don't get very far. Someone also said, worry is like a rocking chair. It'll give you something to do, but it won't get you anywhere. It's interesting that this is our lesson on Thanksgiving Sunday. It's interesting at Thanksgiving that we're talking about being anxious and worried. In the lesson that Scott read, Jesus tells us not to worry about our lives, what we should eat or drink or about what we will wear. Kind of an unusual text, I think, for Thanksgiving. On the other hand, maybe it's right on target. After all, I think gratitude is the perfect antidote for anxiety. Now, if you stop for a second and you look over the total scope of your life, hasn't God been good to you? Do you think the future will be any different? One of the most appealing stories from an earlier generation is Gene Webster's story, Daddy Longlegs. And it's the story of a young girl in an orphanage who is befriended by a person that she does not know. This kind stranger takes a fancy to her when she's a small child and befriends her. But he doesn't reveal to her his identity. And year after year, the favors flow in from her unknown friend. She passes through her childhood years and all the way through college, pursuing opportunities provided to her by this friend whose name she does not know. One day she happens to encounter her unknown benefactor, but she doesn't recognize him. He doesn't look like she had imagined he would. But she finally learns his true identity and loves him, her longtime unknown friend. Now, it's kind of a parable for our lives. We can all think of times when God has blessed our lives and we weren't even aware of it, and we love God for that. In our scripture lesson, Jesus points out that God has been and will continue to be extremely generous toward us. In his typically down-to-earth way, Jesus tells us to look at the birds, how they neither sow nor reap. And yet God doesn't let them starve. If God feeds this tiny little bird, don't you think he will provide for us who are his very special and dearly loved children? The flowers don't fuss and they don't worry over what they'll wear. And God clothes the wildflowers, which are here one day and gone the next, with the finest and the most beautiful colors. If God does that for something growing in the wild, surely God will care for those he has created a little lower than God and crowned us with glory and honor, as the psalm says. Gratitude really is the perfect antidote for our anxiety. But there is a second thing about gratitude we ought to recognize, and that is gratitude keeps blessings flowing into our lives. Call it a self-fulfilling prophecy, if you like, but grateful people seem to attract blessings. A recent study found that people who jot down why they are thankful and what they're thankful for each week feel more optimistic about their lives. They're people who exercise more and even have fewer visits to the doctor than people who write down things that are negative. There's something about this spirit of gratitude that is healing to the body and the soul. When a psychologist from the University of Connecticut interviewed 300 people recovering from a heart attack, he discovered that people who found some positive benefit from their attack were less likely to suffer another one within 8 years. He recommends that every day we write down one or more things that we're grateful for, and then sit down and read that journal once a week. One writer tells of a man who epitomized this kind of outlook on life. He says, a number of years ago, I stayed for about a week in a farmer's house on the west coast of Ireland. He seemed to always be singing and whistling and was full of humor. So I asked him, I said, what is the secret of your happiness? And his reply was, it is a habit of mine to be happy. Every morning when I awaken and every night before I go to bed, I bless my family, the crops, the cattle, and I thank God for the wonderful harvest. Now, was this farmer always blessed with good harvest? No, of course not. But he did consider every harvest, regardless of how large or small, a blessing. There's something about a grateful attitude that seems to cause blessings to flow into a life. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that the worry strangles or chokes life. Gratitude allows for blessings to flow, whereas anxiety chokes them off. But there's one more thing that I think should be said. A person who experiences true gratitude seeks to be a channel of blessings to others. A truly grateful person cannot hoard God's blessings. A grateful person seeks to allow his or her blessings to flow through them to others. There's a story that I dearly love that comes out of World War II about a man with a truly grateful heart. His name was Fred Hargy Hargesheimer. And Hargy's plane was shot down over the Pacific Ocean on June 5th, 1943. Hargy parachuted into enemy territory in Papua New Guinea. Finding shelter in an abandoned native hut, he lived for weeks on snails that he found in the riverbed. Daily he recited the 23rd Psalm and reflected on the hope that his faith gave him. So the natives in the area found Hargesheimer after a month, and they showed him a note written by an Australian soldier that said that they could be trusted because they had saved other pilots. They were Christians, and at great risk they protected this American pilot from capture by the enemy. Well, eventually, Hargy made his way off the island, and years later, while corresponding with a missionary, he discovered that his native rescuers needed a school. And so this man, in the late 40s and early 50s, raised $15,000 for a school building, an amount that would easily be 10 times in today's dollars. He brought in volunteer teachers, and a few years later, he built a library and a clinic. And then 27 years after his rescue, he and his wife moved to New Guinea to, quote, say thank you to the people of the island in a meaningful way. Fred Hargesheimer knew he had lived a blessed life, so he decided to return those blessings to those in greater need than he. That's not the exception, but the rule for people who are truly grateful. They want to pass on those blessings to others. But you already know that, don't you? You're here today, this morning, to give your thanks to God for your many blessings. And you long to pass on the blessings that you have received. On the radio a number of years back, there was a funny but also a pitifully true story about a family of atheists gathered about the Thanksgiving table. They joined hands around that table and then they said, "Thank you, Payne Weber." It's funny, but then it's very poignant. James Jarrett, a writer, said it's sad when people think of thankfulness for success as being something they alone did, or they and their investment advisor. Jarrett gives his definition of a Christian. He says, a Christian is someone who doesn't have to consult his bank book to see how wealthy he really is. And that is true of us. We may or may not in this room have full bank accounts, but we know that we are a wealthy people. because of our faith in Jesus Christ. And on this special week of the year, we pause to give thanks. Amen. This morning, as we pause in our worship for personal and private prayers, we would ask that you remember the families of longtime member George Halverson, who passed away on the 31st of October, the family of Rita Morowitz, who passed away on Friday, November 13th. Rita's mother of Ed Morowitz, and services, he said, will be held during the spring of the year. We also remember the family of Mike Smith, who was the husband of Carol Smith and father of our administrator, Chip Smith, who passed away on Wednesday, November 11th. We continue to surround with our prayers Tom Gregory, Don Hench, and Heather Hartness, as well as the unspoken loved ones of your heart and your mind. Let us now remember them in silent prayer, each from his own heart, each in her own way.